You're listening to the Washington Hospitality Industry Podcast, your primary source of information related to the hospitality industry in Washington State.
Well, good morning, everyone. Today we are talking insurance with the folks from Parker Smith and Feek. We are recording this webinar, so you can check it out later on our website or our YouTube channel, whichever you prefer. Should be a little while after the webinar today. So if you want to, if there's something you missed, you want to go back and watch, we will have that available to you. The slide presentation will be available if you reach out to our guests, Melissa and Cassie, or even Logan, after the webinar, they can get those slides to you. Just a couple of quick things. We will have time for questions. If you want have a question, type it down in the Q&A section at the bottom of your screen. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand this over to Logan Dozier, our Senior Manager of Insurance Services here at the Washington Hospitality Association. Good morning,
thank
Logan.
You. Hey, good morning. Thank you, Lisa. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. As Lisa mentioned, my name is Logan Dozier, and I've been involved in our insurance programs for many, many years, especially our property and casualty one that launched back in May of 2019. Our goal at My Hospitality Insurance here is really to provide our members wins, whether that be through better coverage, better carrier partners, or a better price. We really do put our members first, and we work together to find a solution, especially during this turbulent market. We cover everything from your package policy, which is your property, your general liability, your liquor liability, all the way to those ancillary items, especially cyber insurance. That seems to be one of the key coverages that keeps coming up in many people's minds out there. So if you haven't looked at our program or have in the past, feel free to always reach out to myself or visit our website at myhospitalityinsurance.com. With that, I will turn it over to our partners here. Melissa, take it away.
Thanks, Logan. Hi, everybody. My name is Melissa Holtzclaw. I am an account executive at Parker Smith and Feek / IMA. Many of you know that we merged with them. So anytime you see IMA, it's the same as Parker Smith and Feek. You'll start to see some of our new branding. But I work with my partner here, Cassie Stenberg, and within our hospitality vertical, we work specifically with the Washington Hospitality Association and have had the opportunity to meet many of its members. And a lot of the feedback we're getting lately is, why does my insurance keep increasing year over year? So our main goal for today is just to have a pretty open conversation about what we're seeing in the marketplace and some steps that we think you can do to hopefully make this next renewal easier, maybe limit some of the impact of increasing premiums. So with that, I will let Cassie start. And this is meant to be interactive. So if you have questions, feel free to drop them in the Q&A, as Lisa said, and we will get to those. There's a lot of information, though. So again, afterwards, if you want a copy of the presentation, just let us know. But yeah, Cassie, go ahead.
Thank you, Melissa. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining. My name is Cassie Stenberg. You'll also see Cassie Basquette. I was recently married. We're updating emails as well. As Melissa mentioned, there's been a merge, so there are some changes there. But I am Cassie Stenberg. I've been with Parker Smith and Feek for going on 6 years now and have been involved with the hospitality program since its launch in 2019. And I'm excited to share hopefully what will be some really helpful resources for this next renewal and potentially new business as well. Here's our agenda. We'll do a quick market overview. We'll jump into property casualty, workers' compensation, auto, cyber, and finally, we'll discuss nuclear verdicts and how they're impacting insurance. All right, great. Okay, so, and real quick, we'll just do a bit of a market overview. Hospitality clients, you know, from hotels, motels, restaurants, bars, and taverns, we're always looking at ways to deliver an exceptional guest experience. Through a variety of different means. This can be through potential entertainment, at a restaurant, or perhaps, you have an event venue or maybe a food truck on site. There are lots of different ways that we can add and that our clients add to their businesses that add additional exposure that carriers do take into consideration. So I wanted to make sure that we mention those today. But first, let's focus on property. Number one, one of the biggest impacts that we are seeing with property this year in 2024 and in years previous, in fact, whether natural catastrophic events are up 70% over the past 3 years, according to the Global Marriott program. So this is definitely causing a big impact for property carriers and at renewal. And our hearts, of course, go out to those on the East Coast that are dealing with the recent onslaught of hurricanes and tornadoes and such. So that's the obvious, right? Secondly, property. There are two different markets to discuss here. We've got excess and the surplus lines market. So excess and surplus, it's one and the same. Essentially, in this marketplace, it's a bit different than the standard market in that you will experience adjustments in the coverage that's offered, surplus lines taxes and fees, whereas in the standard market, you might see a package, your general liability and your property placed together versus separately. So again, when we're talking about property, you know, first you need to identify what type of program structure do I have? Am I a package in the standard marketplace? Do I have property and general liability written elsewhere and separately? So those two things we address. Okay, so secondly, in the excess and surplus lines market, carriers are definitely reaching target premiums and minimum premiums. They know what to anticipate within the marketplace and what's happening with the insurance carriers across the nation. So what we are seeing is carriers reaching new target minimum premiums. So oftentimes when we go to present a property policy and changes are made, we go back to the carrier and ask, you know, hey, can we reduce this business personal property limit? Can we reduce this building limit? And expecting that premium to go down for the carrier to tell us, I'm sorry, we've reached our minimum premium limit. That's something that we are seeing in the property market, and it depends on the exposures and how large they are. So what can we do and what carriers are taking into consideration when they're looking at new business and renewals is how the property is protected. This, and I won't list every single one of these, but the property markets, what they're really looking at is the year built. What year is the building construction? Is it 20 years or older? That combined with the actual construction type, is a frame construction, is this ISO, brick and mortar, right? So you might see on your property policy ISO 1, this is frame, and ISO 2, brick and mortar. These things are taken into consideration. If you have a frame building that is 20 years or older, and for example, it is non-sprinklered, you may have less carriers available at new business, or you may experience your carrier non-renewing the policy due to the construction type and several other factors combined.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. Melissa, go ahead.
Why this is important is mainly because a lot of people don't understand how the importance behind having accurate information. So sure, it seems as though maybe the building, some of the stuff going off the building, if you're in a big high rise and the landlord maintains it, some of it doesn't matter, but you're rated on fire life safety. So these are things that the carrier takes into account. So you may not think that the sprinkler system matters, but come to find out you're going to get a credit if you're fully sprinklered and all this stuff. So these are things that's really important that people don't want to just know this information just for the heck of it. But honestly, these are things that once you have the information, it empowers you to know where you stand. And as Cassie was saying earlier, when it's cookie cutter, you have more options within the standard market. Those are kind of off the shelf. But as you start looking at a lot of our clients, especially within hospitality, offers things that are not cookie cutter because they're trying to make those unique experiences, whether or not it's in the type of experience and stuff like that. And so just as Cassie was saying, it's really important. A lot of you may not in hospitality own the buildings, but proper maintenance is something that they're looking at. Do you keep, you know, records of the maintenance and stuff like that? Anyways, I'll digress and let Cassie keep going.
No, that's perfect. And to that point, 5 years ago, when you were talking to your insurance broker, or your carrier, they may not have asked all of these questions. Fast forward 2023, 2024, we're seeing so much changes within the marketplace and these losses that are impacting these carriers that they are drilling down into these details. And what we can do is we can use that, as to Melissa's point, as a strategy, right? If it's whether it's for the renewal or whether maybe you've opened up a new business and and you're looking at prospective competition and who's available to you. So as much as you can, provide the information about this building, even if you're a tenant or if you're the building owner, is very good. Oftentimes carriers are asking for sprinkler reports, for example, and for the tenant that can be frustrating. How do you have access to that? You've got to request it from the landlord, right? And then send it over to the carrier. Applications nowadays are being requested. All of that additional property information, it's vital for the broker as well to be successful within the marketplace and to get the most competitive options back. A lot more of a deeper dive into property at renewal time. Have those discussions with your broker. Talk about anything that you've added recently. If you're in an area with higher crime, have you had, is the parking lot really well lit, for example? To Melissa's point about service and maintenancing of UL 300 and hoods and vents and ducts, there are some carriers. This is an example, a standard market carrier. Who will offer a quote as long as the UL 300 is serviced semi-annually and then hoods, vents, and ducts are serviced quarterly. If those two things are not met, then this carrier cannot extend a proposal and are very competitive, right? So these little bits and pieces about property can impact ultimately how much premium you're paying, whether it's a renewal or new business time.
These also can help offset any potential risks or claims that could come. Having a, extreme weather preparedness plan, all of these things that are listed in here, these are all things that help in the event that there is a claim and help mitigate that as well.
Absolutely. One more thing that we can mention before we move on from property, just as this bullet point about this surplus lines market in the standard market. If you have experienced a non-renewal this year and you were in the standard market and you are looking at surplus and excess lines quotes, something to make note of and to talk to your broker about is your deductible and co-insurance. Co-insurance is it's a clause that states the insured must insure their property to a certain percentage of the value. In the event of a loss, if it is not insured to that percentage of value, you can be on the hook for a portion of that loss. Having that knowledge simply is a big deal, So understanding the policy and how it works, if you do go from that standard marketplace to that surplus lines market, having that discussion with your broker so you feel more empowered about the choices that are available to you. Okay, great. I think that covers most of property. We can move on into general liability and casualty. Great. Okay. So the first thing we want to talk about when it comes to general liability, there's a couple of things at the 50,000 foot view with general liability. We have slip, trip, fall, and public exposure in a restaurant or a hotel for foot traffic. And then, of course, you have liquor liability as well. And liquor liability has been pretty challenging, and general liability has been challenging. And we're going to get to some of the nuclear verdicts that have impacted general liability and excess liability. But what the underwriters are taking into consideration is, well, let's talk about restaurants first, is food sales to alcohol sales. In the past, you may do $500,000 in annually in food and $500,000 annually in alcohol, and you may have had a standard market carrier such as Nationwide or Travelers or Liberty Mutual, for example. As the years have gone on, these carriers have made adjustments to those percentages, where now the standard marketplace is accepting risks that have 35% or less alcohol in total compared to food sales. So what does that do? That limits the markets that are available to us. So if you have higher alcohol, this can be impact not only bars and taverns, but fine dining. Or perhaps you have a, you know, an exposure that has a casino and upscale guest experiences in addition to the restaurant, perhaps, and the hotel. This also can impact general liability and liquor liability rates because of the exposure. Increased sales, increased foot traffic, increased entertainment results in those increased premiums, right? And then when we move from that standard marketplace into the surplus lines market, you're seeing changes in the rate. We are experiencing the minimum premiums in some cases. And then the liquor rate has increased in some cases. I could get pretty specific with rate, but that won't really help you. The best thing to do is to have that discussion with your broker. What am I paying right now for my general liability and my liquor liability rate? And what did I pay last year? And what am I looking at this year? Some clients we've even seen decide, thank you, Melissa, for switching that slide to liquor, because we were going to go roll right into it. Some clients we've even seen decide to remove liquor altogether because it was such a small portion of their business operation. Maybe, you know, they did mimosas on Sunday mornings, but the cost of liquor has increased so drastically that, you know, they decided to remove it. So we've seen that too.
Well, and
to you, Melissa.
It. Yeah. Because also what we see is underwriters, again, as they're scrutinizing things, are going to websites, they're looking at what the offerings are. And believe it or not, they're coming back seeing, you know, happy hours listed all day long. So some of these things are, again, things that you have to think about if what your business model is. Is this what we're trying to go for? If it is, then just know we're going to have increased insurance rates. Or if we're trying to mitigate around this, you know, we've had a lot of our clients ask us, what do we do? So again, looking back to what underwriters are taking into consideration, it is the alcohol percentage of sales in addition to how late you're open. How much food are you selling? You know, what kind of security do you have? Because it's inevitable that once the alcohol starts flowing, sometimes then you start running into these issues. Similarly, about proper training for your staff and what that looks like. Outside of the liquor, though, Cassie, what are some of the other things as far as general liability that really underwriters focus on?
For hospitality, a big one is going to be fast food, quick service restaurants, just because of that high foot traffic footprint. So when, you know, and again, for a risk that has the higher foot traffic or maybe fast food and grease or deep fat frying combined with that higher foot traffic, you have to be a little bit more strategic with the markets that you're approaching. Something to take into consideration for the general liability and the higher foot traffic, if there is deep fat frying included there, are there sprinklers, and is it in the entire restaurant? You know, a lot of our older buildings in the past, the requirement was just the sprinklers over the restaurant, the seating area portion and the UL 300 fire suppression in the kitchen, but that has limited some of the available markets out there too. So sprinklers is a big one. Higher foot traffic is a big one. For general liability and understanding your current rate, having that discussion with your broker. Your broker will reach out, or your broker should reach out at least 90 days in advance of your renewal to discuss your sales with you each year. It's a great thing to do to discuss because general liability, your policy is placed and rated based upon your sales and your public exposure, your square footage. So knowing what was rated the year before versus what you're coming into in the new year, whether you have, you know, did you hit your projections or did you exceed those projections? Having those discussions with your broker and understanding what to expect at audit time, for example, if your policy is auditable, these are all things that should be done early and in advance, so you have a good understanding of what to expect. Let's see here. I think that is, what am I missing, Melissa? Get everything. We got hours of operation. A couple more things with general liability, Melissa mentioned. Was the hours of operation. Something else is at 21 and over. If your location is just geared towards adults, that could reduce some of the carriers that are willing to extend a proposal. And then, of course, we talked about live entertainment. We talked about deep fat frying. We've talked about security. And we've talked about catering. Loss history is the big one, of course, too, when it comes to general liability and liquor liability. If you do have losses, for example, and the losses are higher than the premium paid in previous years, you might be experiencing rate increases. And this can just be completely outside of your general liability and or your property policies. So that is something to take into consideration as well. Knowing what your losses are, when they happened, how much they were, and when they will fall off those loss runs and how that impacts your premium are also very good discussions to have surrounding around general liability.
Cassie, real quick, or even Melissa, can you talk about also how social media can impact an underwriter's perception of a business when possibly...
Froze.
Outside of climate pledge or outside of a hiking trail and whatnot, and how to possibly work in that scenario when the underwriter's looking at social media, but you're not doing those business practices going into that renewal?
Yeah, absolutely. Melissa, I can take this one to start and then you can follow up with it. I just had one recently. It was a perfect example, and Melissa mentioned it earlier, happy hour. You know, if you have a fine dining restaurant, has a really nice happy hour, but the underwriter, when they go to the restaurant, they don't necessarily see immediately that it's fine dining, but they see this happy hour is advertised. Just a quick adjustment to that pop-up on their website completely changed the underwriter's perspective of the operation, and they were able to release a quote. So little things like that on social media, if you stop an operation or a certain offering, you want to make sure that you're keeping those things up to date because the underwriters are definitely looking.
And sometimes you don't always get fully why they decline, but outside of hospitality, I had an underwriter look at a client's website last week, and it was for janitorial services, and saw a stock photo of somebody in a hazmat suit. Well, they came back and declined, saying, "We don't do anything." And then they were like, "It was just a picture." So then we had to go through this whole long, thing about it. But again, underwriters are scrutinizing more so. And so again, I would say I have clients who it's in their business model to have nightclubs and different higher exposure businesses. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think part of it is just understanding where you're at. And even that's when we start looking more so into the training and into other things you can help offset it. So if you have a more of a high liquor sales, do we have security? Again, back to some of these things, what are we doing to help offset it? And looking at the overall risk to help make things slightly better for everybody.
And then just to kind of piggyback on that question, these are some of the live questions we're getting here and everything. I mean, is this communication normal for carriers just slapping and saying, we're declining, we're not doing this. We saw this on your Facebook. Are we seeing this more and more than what we saw maybe 5 years ago? Is this kind of becoming the trend and the norm, unfortunately?
I would say yes. I think as similar, especially for hospitality, as we get into the nuclear verdicts, but essentially a nuclear verdict is anything over 10 million. We're seeing those, they're unprecedented for things that are a slip, trip and fall, but people are targeting them. And so right now, yes,
I would agree with that too. They definitely ask a lot more than they have over the past 5 years, and slapping declinations does happen. The one thing that is good for us, for IMA and for Parker Smith and Feek, and for all of the members of the Hospitality Association and any of our clients, is that we are class acts with our carriers. We work with the highest level of integrity, which means that, when we receive a declination, it's typically unfortunately, I have to decline due to this reason and my hands are tied. So we keep up that good rapport and we do business, on a high level. So yes, the declinations get slapped down. It's terrible and it's frustrating, you know. But knowing the market is the key, and knowing where to go and targeting.
Getting started early, because some of it is just getting started early and getting some of those questions out of the way. Because you also have underwriters who, when you're only 30 days out, think this is too much for me to try to get done in this amount of time, so I'm just going to decline. So it's really getting started early. It's addressing those questions. It's not just taking the declination. Your broker really right now has to work hard on your behalf. Back to that janitorial instance, we get the declination. I call him. I say, they're not doing that. I have to go back and forth with them. Finally, they say, if you can have that image taken off their website, we'll move forward. And so it's really about being creative, and it's about making sure everybody is communicating what needs to happen. And you definitely will start to see yourself having more options available.
And when you say early, are you talking 3 to 4 months starting that conversation there? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say 90 days. Some underwriters aren't going to actually look at it until you get closer, but you can start to at least get a pulse on who is interested in this type of risk, who you might have on backup. You can start engaging with your incumbent carrier. What are we looking like? One thing that is also at the end is talking about, you know, what we're also seeing right now is carriers coming back with exclusions within the current policy. So there's changes, and, you know, we're seeing it, especially within hospitality for abuse and molestation. And so these are things, again, not getting started early. Some of these are requirements by lenders, by property, by landlords and stuff. And so by starting in advance, you help eliminate any issues of not finding coverage or being in a position of having to take something that is crazy expensive because you didn't have time to market the account.
And one thing we are seeing, and I can to that point, is some carriers at renewal may reduce the limits that they have offered in the past. We've seen this in the excess market and the general liability market. So say you have, you know, a $2 million, $4 million limit. At renewal, your carrier may only offer you $1 million, $2 million plus the rate increases. You know, or same situation with the umbrella. And then, of course, Melissa's point, whether you have a franchise requirement or a landlord requirement, a lease requirement of certain limits, but then the carriers are only providing so much, you can find yourself in a position where you have no time to be strategic and to get out there to find additional options. So just to the point of getting the conversation started as early as possible and providing the information that the broker is requesting, but getting on the phone too and talking through it is just really helpful instead of just email exchanges. It's something that we really like to do.
We won't spend too much time on workers' comp just because I think most people are in Washington, which is a monopolistic state. That doesn't mean that you don't have to still have best practices and stuff like that. But most of you know that most of workers' comp premium is based on your mod score. So if you are experiencing losses and need to improve that, there's just kind of a little bit of a brief information here. Again, making sure that your employees are safe is everybody's top priority. but again, we're seeing where little things always fall through the cracks, just as, you know, are people wearing proper, you know, PPE, the gloves when they're, you know, on the cut line? Are people, you know, doing these things? And who is, who's watching that? One thing that I had a client implement this year was they started tying bonuses to losses. So for managers, locations that had high losses, that manager wasn't going to be able to get the bonus because these are things that are affecting the overall business. And so I would just say, again, we want to protect our employees, but make sure that we have proper policies and that they are, that your employees are checking off on these. We've talked a lot in the past about breaks and stuff like that. And the more that you can get people to sign off, acknowledge, and review safety policies, manuals, all of that, you're in a better position.
Absolutely. And just one quick add to this, workers' compensation, also known as employer's liability in Washington state. You see that on your policy.
Next, we have auto.
I can jump into auto. Yeah, let me jump into auto. So there's a few different things that we want to address with auto. One, we'll just talk really quickly about food trucks. The market for food trucks has been pretty tough. It's a very narrow market. And we actually have one top market that we go to with food trucks right now, and with many others, either non-renewing or just not offering quotes anymore. So again, having the conversation early with food trucks and getting down to the basics, your make, models, the values of the food trucks, where they're stored, and radius, how far they're traveling, all of those things come into play. If you have a food truck as part of your existing operation, there are more options available, which is, which is pretty nice. So if you have a restaurant and a food truck, you might have more carriers willing to extend a quote versus just a food truck operation only. So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it is, let's talk about delivery. Delivery with auto is considered hired and non-owned auto. It's HNOA. This coverage in the past has been endorsed onto a package policy. For example, if you have a policy with Liberty Mutual and you have a pizza restaurant and you offer delivery either with your own drivers or through a third party like Uber or DoorDash, you have hired and non-owned auto, and that's critical to have on the policy. Something to just mention, in 2024, it is much tougher to find a standard market carrier, so your Liberty Mutuals and your Travelers, to offer hired and non-owned auto if a business or a client is offering delivery through the business. Some cases even through third party, and they will exclude hired and non-owned auto altogether and just remove it from the policy. Then we have to go out into the surplus lines market for hired and non-owned auto quotes. This market is a lot different. Now your broker will request an application from you, an auto application to be completed. They will request the copies of the motor vehicle record for the drivers, and they will request copies of driver's licenses. There are quite a few markets out there available for hired and non-owned auto, and the premium, depending on the sales and the drivers, can range on average, I see, between about $5,000 to $7,000 and up annually for hired and non-owned auto. And that's starting down in that like $400,000 in sales range with about three drivers. So this is something that's impacted a lot of folks because it can create a problem at renewal time if the carrier is not offering hired and non-owned auto. You have to go and secure that coverage elsewhere. There is also catering, right? So you're a business and you own your catering vehicles, and your employees are not driving their vehicles. There are many more standard market options still available for hospitality and catering. And that's same if the catering is the focus of the sales, and if it is just a portion of the sales. And for this, at new business and at renewal, oftentimes your broker's just going to ask you, do you still have the same vehicles? Check, make sure that they've got the right stuff that's covered, but also capture any new vehicles. And in that standard marketplace, it's not as difficult. You're not having to provide the MVRs and the driver's licenses as often as you have to do that with the hired and non-owned auto and delivery piece. So more options for catering, less options for delivery. Hired and non-owned auto is the whole point of that. All right, and I'll pass off to Melissa for cyber.
So cyber, something that I think most hospitality clients think isn't as big of an issue, or a lot of people assume that there's a small amount of coverage in their package policy, which there typically is. But we are seeing an increase in claims. We're really noticing that everybody's a target, whether or not you're a large or small company. So it is something that we are talking to more of our clients about, or even just starting to engage in understanding what cyber carriers are looking at. Some of the initial things that are free are just kind of first doing kind of a cyber assessment. That's understanding what you have in place and maybe things that need to change. So confirmation of controls, what are your best practices? We actually have a cyber program for the WHA that we designed recently. It's a very, very, very affordable program for people to have the cyber coverage. And again, talking about best practices, these are things that sometimes can seem overwhelming to implement, but once you have them in place, you're really doing protection of your business as well as your clients, making sure you have multi-factor authentication, that you have endpoint detection, secure backups. A lot of times, what we're seeing is obviously with the change of technology, one of the biggest things we see is that employees aren't trained properly, which then again, there's an exposure there. So really just best practices. Again, if you have questions on what that looks like, we are happy to do kind of a risk assessment for you and kind of gauge where you're at. This is something we do with our clients before renewal or before we even take them over, just to help, again, for them to understand kind of what best practices are. And then
before you go into that, can we go back for food trucks one moment? We have a question from the audience. How are food trucks that don't even drive, they are an extension of the main location kitchen? So if you have an extension of the main location kitchen and it's just a food truck that it doesn't go anywhere, how should I deal with this restricted not to even call it a food truck, even though all the permits still require it to be labeled a food truck in regards to inspections? So he believes this would be this would cause an issue if a claim was ever made.
Excuse me. So the biggest thing with that is, I would say, actually, I have a client that's kind of similar. Except it was not, it's not a food truck. It was a train, but it used to move, you know, and now it does not. And it is an awesome restaurant. So a piece of this, we've got the building and then you've got the food truck. It never moves. It just stays there. So the biggest thing for this, if you're already insured and you're with your carrier and you have your renewal, a couple things is if your price is competitive, right? And you're insured properly, the biggest thing is to make sure that if you're going to go out to market, that you know that there are limited markets that are going to offer a quote, but having the conversation with the underwriter to make sure that they understand what they are underwriting is the most important thing here, because it's very easy for a broker to get online real quick and to enter in the information for a quick quote to get it out. And then come inspection time, to this point here, the questions point, find out that it might not be acceptable to that carrier, or if there is a loss, am I insured properly? And is it going to trigger that food truck that's sitting there? Another coverage that might come into play that could be discussed there is inland marine, but inland marine is for property that is moving. And then also understanding your policy language. If you, let's say we have clients with ice cream carts, the property is covered as long as it is not further than 200 feet from the restaurant or the establishment. So having a good, strong conversation with your broker around how the current policy would respond if there was a loss at that food truck that never moves. And then at new business, making sure that the new underwriters understand that it isn't moving, that it is stationary, and throughout that underwriting process, so there are no surprises. Melissa, do you have anything to add to that?
I would agree. I would say if it were me, I would be marketing it as a like a separate building on the property. Mm-hmm. And since it's not moving, as long as it's never moving, I would go about it that way and make sure that they know that it is operating, but it's not an actual truck that's driving. It's more just a kitchen. And so,
right, so it wouldn't have an auto policy, right?
Yeah. Some things would go, again, knowing the information, like are people being charged out there and it's a whole different, is all the food being cooked out there and it's its own separate operating, or is it just some of it's out there? So again, I think it would need more information, but I think if you highlight everything clearly to an underwriter, it will make it much more appealing, the fact that it's not actually moving.
Yeah, and I like what you mentioned. That's a big part. You know, your main restaurant should be location one, building one. And then your non-moving food truck should be location one, building two. And that's how it should be listed on the policy, with the value associated to it and everything. Obviously, because you have equipment, cooking equipment, it could, you know, if it burned and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, something that Logan and Melissa and I do all the time is we renew policies with no pressure. So if you know, you're not sure if it's insured properly, send it our way and let us take a look at it. And we're happy to just give you the feedback too, to make sure that, you know, you can feel good about what you've purchased. All right. So we'll move back into cyber. Oh, hey, one thing I too want to just real quick on cyber too, Melissa, that I think we may have skipped over, is just that cyber can be kind of overwhelming, especially maybe if you haven't purchased cyber in the past. You know, The questions can be confusing. I don't know if you're like me. Yeah, I didn't know, you know, all of the different things that they would ask. So again, you know, reach out to us. You know, we like to help complete the apps and make sense of what they're asking too. So it's easier to purchase that coverage and to make sure that you have something, you know, that's good for the exchange of your dollars, of your insurance dollars. You need those additional resources and things that Melissa was mentioning, versus that standard market cyber coverage that you might have as a throw in for $100,000 on the policy. When something really happens, you will want this standalone cyber that is specifically designed for cyber losses. All right, cool. That was it. I just wanted to add that in there.
And then I think at the end of it, these were things that Cassie and I just discussed, that we've mentioned some of them already that we think are important for people to understand. Obviously, we mentioned, you know, starting the renewal process early. And this doesn't just start the renewal process. But again, I mean, I talk to my clients very regularly. It's not just, oh, it's renewal time. I love when they reach out like, hey, do you know what's happening in the market? I try to keep them updated, even with them reaching out. It's never too early to talk to them and try to get an understanding of where things stand. It's really important to partner with industry experts. One thing that we see a lot coming from the WHA is a lot of people want to, you know, have multiple people looking at their insurance. And I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between brokerages and what they do. For instance, you know, a State Farm only is State Farm, and then that's all that they quote. That's all that they're, that's the only program that they have access to, versus if you start going with like Parker Smith and Feek, where we have access to a wide range of brokers. So I think it's understanding who is a best fit for that risk, because again, you can send out applications and quotes and try to get quotes online. But if you're going to a wrong carrier for it, you'll just get declined. So I think understanding that and having, I think we work with very strong carrier relations that look for us for business. And so they're continually trying to figure out what they can do for our clients to help improve coverages and enhance what they offer as well. One thing we didn't cover was contract review. This is one of the best services, value-added services that Parker Smith and Feek IMA offers. I encourage all of my clients to do this. It's basically a free set of eyes to look over any of your vendor agreements, any of your landlord agreements, anything like that. 9 times out of 10, we add an additional insurance language that helps protect you, whether or not it's an indemnification agreement. Again, our goal is to try to transfer risk where we can off of our clients. And contract review is a great way to do it. Most people, even if it's a lender, most people don't understand that a lot of these are negotiable. So whereas we never want our clients to be underinsured, I do see some requirements that come through that don't make sense. And so again, our job is to work on your behalf and make sure that you're comfortable with the level of coverage you have, you don't feel exposed, and that we're making sure that you're meeting those requirements. Cassie mentioned different deductible options. Again, we also talked about new policy exclusions that may be coming in, making sure that you understand what those are and what they look like. One thing we didn't discuss was also, what's the word I'm looking for? Not subjectivities, protective safeguards. So there are some protective safeguards that are written into policies that are important to know about, which is, for instance, the one that comes off the top of my head, that if you are doing your sprinkler maintenance, you're required to notify the carrier. And if you don't, then there's a lapse in coverage. So these are things, just make sure to reach out and ask your broker, do I have any of these? Have an understanding of how they work. Again, asking your broker ahead of, are you marketing my account this year? And finding out why carriers are declining. So that way, then you can have a conversation about those. As Cassie mentioned earlier, finding out whether or not a carrier has a minimum premium. Certain carriers are appeal to different markets. Some of them are more in the middle market, some of them are in small business. And so if you are more on the smaller business side, then looking in a middle market for coverage is going to mean that they're going to increase premium or have a minimum premium room. So just making sure you're going to the right carriers again. Updated loss runs. This is going to be key. Most carriers will not release quotes without updated loss runs. We don't want them too far in advance. 60 days is great.
Well, let's hope what is an updated loss run? What is it?
So it would be something dated from that day that goes back for 3 minimum. Some want 5, some have asked for 7, which is not realistic, but the last 3 to 5 years of loss history, currently dated, currently valued. And then usually if there are losses, what I like to do is go back and highlight what those losses are and then highlight what my clients have done to mitigate them. So what have we implemented? Have we, you know, if there was a water loss, have we put in, you know, sensors and stuff to help with some of those damages? And I think those, that type of consideration, being able to highlight again, you can offset things as a carrier comes back. You can hope and pray, oh, I hope they don't bring up, you know, my loss from last year. But just because they don't bring it up doesn't mean that they're not rating and considering it when they're doing your renewal or a quote. So getting, getting ahead of things, a lot of times by not discussing things does not put you in a better situation. And so again, I would just say get ahead of things early. And if you ever need a second opinion, Cassie and I are always here. I have people reach out all the time. Well, is this normal? Is that normal? We're talking very high level here. So if there's something specific, always feel free to reach out.
Absolutely. That was great. Did you touch on the carrier applications and the supplements? I think we did earlier. We talked a lot about the requirements of new applications and supplements depending on which carrier we're approaching. Okay, great.
And then again, we mentioned briefly the nuclear verdict. So this is something that we are seeing an increase in across industries, but essentially it's when a jury awards more than $10 million when there's really nothing that there's no data that shows why it should be awarded that way. It's unfortunate. Obviously there's no amount of money you can put on a life, but what we are seeing is where there's companies that just out of maybe because of a big name are being told, oh, well, you have the money, pay out. We're just seeing a lot of this happening. And the more that you can do and have documented and prepared to help in the event of a claim, say, but I've done all that I could do, will go a long ways. And the one that Cassie had mentioned was a recent, the $301 billion verdict, which was a liquor liability in Texas, actually, when somebody was struck by a drunk driver. So these are things that nobody ever, ever wants to have to deal with. Nobody even likes to hear about it. But when we make sure that training and stuff is being properly handled, we will see a reduction in these. So thank you. That is all that we had, unless Cassie wants to add on anything.
Oh, that was it. We're really happy everybody joined us. Hopefully everybody got a lot out of this. It was a lot of information really quickly.
A lot of information. Yes. Yeah. Is there any other questions?
Open book. We love questions. Anything.
Except for
how to stop hurricanes.
Any last words from Melissa, Cassie, or Logan?
No, just thank you all so very much for taking the time out of your busy schedules to talk about insurance. This is a frustrating topic sometimes. Sometimes it's not. And we just want you to know that you do have a very large team of people that are here to help, answer those questions, be that support, hopefully bring you over to Parker Smith and Feek and to IMA. But more so, you know, it's a challenging landscape to navigate, and it's important to have a good team on your side that you can trust and that's transparent about what you're purchasing and how you're protecting your business and your assets. So with that, thanks everybody very much. We appreciate it.
This will be up on our website later on today, probably in about an hour or so, if you want to come back and check it out at wahospitality.org. Also, if you are interested in learning about our hospitality health insurance program, come by next week at 10 o'clock, same day, same time, Wednesday at 10. And if you'd like to register, there is a link on our website also for that. So thank you all very much. And you have a great day.
Take care. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to the Washington Hospitality Industry Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, wahospitality.org, where you can learn more about the restaurant and lodging industries and the Washington Hospitality Association. Be sure to subscribe to the show in iTunes, Google, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Thank you so much for that effort. Until next time.